Margaret Atwood, talking with the Bush administration here, not a word out of their mouths has been honest since the day they came in. I can easily begin to believe the worst.
So far, they are limited by the Constitution. They are limited by the way the United States government is put together. And they are limited by you, the citizenry, and the kinds of congressmen you write letters to and elect. So there are checks and balances. We're not yet in Stalin's Russia, where he could essentially do any crazy old thing he wanted to. And, you know, it's so true that when a leader has too much power and is also isolated and surrounded by nothing but yes men, that's when these awful things happen. It happened to the Shah of Iran. When nobody can speak truth to power, you know, and nobody can say, look, you know, this is, you don't know what people are thinking. You're not in touch with reality. We still keep having to go back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau and the social contract, because that was a lot of the thinking that went into the way the U.S. government was put together in the 18th century. And he said, for heaven's sake, don't combine religion and government. For heaven's sake, don't do that. For heaven's sake, you have to have religious toleration. And democracy is the hardest form of government to maintain. It's very slippery. It keeps sliding in the direction of oligarchy and autocracy because it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to have a democracy. It does take eternal vigilance, and it does take citizens watching out for people who are devoted to power grabs. But I'm not without hope for you guys.
Sitting up in Canada.
Every time, you know, Washington sneezes, Canada gets a cold. Everything you do has an effect on us. So we're not, it isn't the great divide. You know, it's all interconnected.
How does Canada, for the people you've known, view what's going on in the U.S.?
In general, Canada was not convinced by the WMD proof. Our Prime Minister Jean Chrétien said, what we need is the proof, and that will be the proof. I think that when so many different reasons are given for doing something and none of them are completely watertight, there's some other reason that is not being stated. And I would refer you to an article in the Atlantic Monthly a couple months ago called The Fall of the House of Saud. I think the real reasons for the feeling of urgency about doing this Iraqi thing are probably to be found there.
In Saudi Arabia?
Well, the fact that they had their hand on the oil tap and $1 trillion in deposit in the United States. They could have pulled the plug on you at any time. And they had so much leverage that it was they who were determining which Saudi Arabians needed visas to come to this country and which did not. So the balance of power has just been shifted somewhat. But you couldn't say that if you were the administration. You certainly couldn't have said that in advance, because then they might have done it. It came out of the mouth of Mr. Wolfowitz recently in the Vanity Fair article, in which he said, of course, there's this other big reason which nobody's been mentioning, and that's Saudi Arabia.
That would ascribe, in some sense, less than malevolence to the Bush administration.
Well, you see, nobody thinks they're evil. You know, politicians, not even Hitler thought he was evil. He thought he was good. I don't know what Stalin thought of himself. It's a mystery to me. They don't come in thinking, I am a bad person, I'm going to do evil and make everybody's life hell. That's not what they come in thinking. They usually come in thinking, I am a good person, I've got the answers, and I'm going to make everybody's life better, although they may not like it at first. It will be better for them in the long run. That's what they think. They're often self-deluding, but they don't think of themselves as evil monsters. They sometimes think of parts of their citizenry as evil monsters who have to be destroyed, and I think that's when things get dicey, when people are so convinced of their own goodness that they define everybody else as evil. That's dangerous.
Margaret Atwood, what is the role of a writer in this, do you think, if
the
any?
The role of a writer. You cannot tell writers what to do. It's never worked. You can't say, all right, writers, here's your role. There was this thing in the 30s when people were supposed to be very proletarian, and they've always had trouble with writers. You know, they've just always had trouble because writers follow the spirit. They follow the winds of the spirit as it blows, and Some spirits blow in the direction of daffodils, and others blow in the direction of spy stories. There's just nothing you can do. All you can do is take what they have written and then look at that. But you can't make them all line up because they will never do it.
I would think not, actually.
So you do have hope. Well, I think the big question is, does it matter if people lied? That's the question. Do the American people care if they were made monkeys of, if they were made monkeys of? Or do we judge wars by their results? And I don't think this war is over yet. People are still being shot and killed. Looks very much as if some kind of resistance movement is being put together. And I did write a piece somewhere back in January or so called Napoleon's Two Biggest Mistakes. And they were going into Spain and underestimating the Spanish religious fervor, which launched a guerrilla war against them, which eventually drove them out, lost Napoleon a lot of men. And going into Russia without a clear reason and never being able to come to grips with the enemy, which just kept receding mirage-like before him. So, you know, where is Saddam Hussein's head on a stick? And no clear moment where you can say this wonderful change has now taken place.